Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Dial 678-ESOG now for a solution to your foundation and waterproofing problems.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Hope all of you had a great 4th of July weekend. Ours sort of extended into Monday yesterday. We did a pre-recorded edition of our program yesterday. Really fun to be able to spend some time with family and friends, at least as much as you can in this socially distant world in which we currently live, but a good time nonetheless. I will say, even apart from coronavirus, my relationship with the 4th of July has just changed a lot. It used to be that I wanted to be in like the biggest crowd you could possibly be in, you know, whatever the big event was taking place, gigantic professional fireworks display. I wanted to be a part of that. I don't quite think I have the constitution for that anymore. I don't like crowds as much as maybe I used to, at least when it comes to stuff like that. Sporting event crowds are still just fine for me, but when it comes to stuff like that, don't like it as much as I used to. I like staying in my neighborhood. I like hanging out. I like the kind of makeshift fireworks displays that kind of come up here. I'm also, I'll confess, and then we'll move on, a total hypocrite when it comes to the 4th of July, because if you're on social media, one of the great debates are like the pro fireworks folks versus the anti fireworks folks. I've decided that I'm the worst of this category. I am pro fireworks when I'm part of it, but anti fireworks when it's happening like three doors down and I'm not a part of it. So nonetheless, hope all of you had a great 4th of July, and it's good to have you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Let me do this on the recruiting stuff off the very beginning of our show. It's been kind of interesting to look over the course of the last couple of days at some of the recruiting chatter that's been out there. A lot of finalists being announced by a lot of five-star prospects. This is at least good news in the fact that all the names I'm going to mention here in the course of the next few minutes, they all kind of include Georgia, but maybe not as good a news in terms of the specific relationship for Georgia with some of these players. Let me begin with this. Best news of all is the fact that Amarius Mims, who five-star offensive lineman, continued, thought anyway, to have a very deep and solid relationship with Georgia. We have found out, now this was teased for us last week, and we mentioned this on the show at the time, but we have now found out that indeed his recruiting process has accelerated, and he's probably going to announce his commitment sooner than we initially thought. Mims himself made it official after it had been said on his behalf a few days ago that he'll be committing on August 15th, and he says to mark your calendars for that. And of course, a lot of Georgia guys out there pushing for him, including Brock Vandegrift, who had a very nice showing at the opening last week. He was on social media saying, hey, we got to make sure we get this guy. Dog fans, we need this guy. So it would seem to be pretty good news with Amarius Mims in Georgia. And I think it's pretty telling when it comes to Mims here that, and this is very similar to a lot of situations, the relationships that Georgia had that were strong prior to the coronavirus lockdown would seem to still be pretty strong for the most part. For instance, Georgia's kind of been thought to be the leader for Mims. The fact that through all of this, Georgia has maintained that status, that's easy to understand when you see the way that some other recruitments have also played out there as well. I think this is another example of what you've said about Matt Luke the entire time, that while Sam Pittman may have been arguably the best offensive line coach in the country when he was at Georgia, and you can't really recruit better than Pittman did, and for the most part, the results of the offensive lines on the field really good there as well. Certainly, it seems like Matt Luke has not missed a beat as he has stepped into that role for Sam Pittman. That's all really good news. However, the rest of the recruiting stuff, admittedly, and I don't mean to be negative, I'm just trying to be as honest and realistic as I can, the rest of the recruiting stuff that's out there is a little bit of a mixed bag here. For instance, I think a lot of us thought that Smile Mondin, the five-star linebacker, was getting ready to announce his commitment, and it was probably down to Georgia and maybe Auburn, maybe Tennessee. But I think a lot of folks thought Georgia led, and I think that Mondin himself had indicated that he would announce that in the month of June. Obviously, June came and went. What we have now is an Instagram post for Smile Mondin where all of a sudden what we may have thought was a top three is now a top five. As I said before, it does include Auburn and Tennessee along with Georgia, but now you've got Florida and LSU there as well. I won't begin to say where I think Mondin's going to go or how all of this plays, but just given the fact that you thought time was on your side and Mondin was about to make a Georgia announcement at some point last month, the fact that all of a sudden now it's a top five and all of a sudden now there's a lot cloudier scenario of where Mondin's recruitment is going to go from this, admittedly, I have to sort of say that doesn't really feel like great news. Now, we've talked to Jeff Sintel about this a bunch. Jeff Sintel has talked about this before the hedges presented by Kroger as well. I'm not in the business of telling you that Georgia's not getting Smile Mondin, but I don't mind telling you, by now, I thought Georgia would have already had Smile Mondin. So the fact that it doesn't is at least something there. Speaking of something, and you can decide what you make of this, the five-star defensive lineman who, really for me, if I'm making a list of my favorite recruits, Mason Smith may come pretty close to being about as high on my list as I could possibly get. I know a lot of the folks on the forum feel the same way at forum.dognation.com. Mason Smith has put out a top eight. It does include Georgia. This is one of those, it's almost confusing to see who all these teams are because instead of using the typical logos up top, he uses the mascots. Now, he does give you the program logos down at the bottom, but you have to sort of sift through this Where's Waldo of mascots to figure out who all these top eight are here. But it is Alabama, it's Florida, Georgia, of course, LSU, Miami, Oklahoma, Oregon is in there, and USC as well. You know, this is one of those things where Jeff Sintel was pretty clear when he joined us on, I guess it would have been, he joined us Wednesday of last week because we had the big breaking recruiting news that popped up and Friday was a holiday. And I asked him point blank at the time, I said, is Georgia going to be able to wrestle away a guy like Mason Smith from the state of Louisiana? That's obviously a big time wish list name for many UGA fans. Can you get him out of the state of Louisiana? And Jeff Sintel said, honestly, that's probably going to be a pretty difficult pull all the way around. Not impossible, but difficult. However, you've got to be in it to win it, and Georgia is clearly in it for Mason Smith right now by virtue of the fact that he's in the top eight. So if you're following along so far, you got the good news. It seems like Georgia still, I would guess, based on what the internet's saying, online chatter would say that Georgia may still lead for Amarius Mims, and his commitment's going to come sooner than we initially thought. It's going to come in the month of August. Admittedly, probably not the greatest news when it comes to Smile Mondah, not saying he's not coming to Georgia. For all I know, he very much could. As I said, I just thought he would already be a part of the 2021 class. And instead, his recruitment seems to be going the other direction. He's expanding his list of finalists, kind of going to a top five there in the Mason Smith thing. You can make of that what you will. Now there's the just plain weird news, and I won't spend a ton of time on this, but I will mention it for a moment. There was a tweet from Tony Grimes, who recently announced his commitment to North Carolina, that kind of got some attention. It seemed to suggest that he's, you know, thinking about a lot of things right now. And I guess, you know, he's kind of got his mind overwhelmed, kind of speaking in emojis. If you're watching on video, I'll show this to you, what Tony Grimes had to say. Basically, the overall takeaway here is, and he, you know, tags his own dad in there, that, you know, he's just kind of cloudy with his decision-making process right now. I guess the interpretation on this might be that this is a young man who's already made his decision in North Carolina. You could say, well, that maybe he's reconsidering that decision. If I had to guess, I'd say that's probably not what this is. To me, this more feels like, is he going to truly reclassify as a 2020 recruit, which, you know, in Jeff's reporting when or I should say 2021 recruit, in Jeff's reporting when Grimes made his commitment announcement, that was, you know, kind of the thought that he'd probably do. However, a lot of that depends on, I guess, if the Commonwealth of Virginia has high school football this fall. So apparently Grimes, I'm going to read into this a little bit and assume that he's still thinking about that decision here a little bit. Obviously, it's very easy to understand this from the perspective of being a Georgia fan. If Grimes were to not reclassify, not move into the 2020 class, if he were to remain a 2021 prospect, that still gives Georgia a chance. If he reclassifies to a 2020, if he goes and takes the online class that he needs to graduate high school and go ahead and enrolling at North Carolina, that's obviously not good news for Georgia there in that front. So I guess the takeaway for all of this is a lot of five-star prospects making some news over the weekend, all of them in some way related to Georgia. The quality of those relationships, the nature of those relationships, I guess that's still yet to be determined and be defined. I know a lot of Georgia fans are anxious about the next big commit that comes to the Dogs, and if the momentum of the last few recruiting cycles for UGA is going to still be present here in 2021. I understand the angst about that. I myself am also waiting for some good news as well. Yes, the key takeaway is for UGA fans, that wait is going to have to last a little bit longer. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented today by Engineered Solutions of Georgia, and we're glad to have you with us no matter how you get to us today, live on video, 10 a.m., Facebook and YouTube. We're on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Rev, and as a podcast, wherever you find them, Apple, Google, Spotify, worldfamousdognation.com. We post the show every day. We're just really glad to have you with us here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. And a big thanks to our friends at ESOG for making the show possible. You know, they are experts when it comes to foundation and waterproofing issues. And let's face it, those are big deals. It's been kind of a rainy year, I would say, in the state of Georgia, which means you're going to deal with more of that kind of stuff. You walk into your garage, you see a wet spot where you didn't used to see one. You have water coming into your basement when it rains. For, you know, the average person in the Atlanta metro area, that's a thing that you just deal with on a regular basis, or at least you have the potential of dealing with that. And if you're finding yourself facing that issue, then you got to do some work to get that taken care of. And that's especially true with the foundation stuff as well, because let's face it, you know, when you see those cracks show up in your foundation, things like that, that can be the sign of a much bigger problem. Don't wait to get that seen about. Deep down, you know you need to do the work or have someone do it for you. Why not have the folks who've been experts at this? Two full-time engineers on staff. That's what Engineered Solutions of Georgia can provide for you. ESOG is also a proud partner of UGA that makes them really fun to do business with. And they're very easy to get in touch with as well. A simple phone number to remember. Dial 678-ESOG-NOW. That's 678-ESOG-NOW. And that'll get you in touch with Engineered Solutions of Georgia. All right, good to have you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by ESOG. Let me talk about Rodrigo Blankenship for a moment, because I don't think we do talk enough about the challenge that Georgia faces in terms of replacing Blankenship for this upcoming season. He is, after all, another one of those national award winners for Georgia. He was the Groves Award winner as the nation's top kicker. By the way, when he won that award and stood there and received all the accolades that kind of go along with that, he did a great job of kind of telling his story about everything that transpired for him over the course of becoming one of the biggest fan favorites in recent UGA history. On a day in which we're talking about how Georgia replaces him, probably seems appropriate to kind of go back and relive some of that. Here's Rodrigo Blankenship from last winter.
It's been amazing. I couldn't have asked for anything better. Just going to the University of Georgia, one of the best programs in the country. Walking on and, you know, just having to go to work every single day and then having a coaching staff turnover is never the best situation. But, you play with the cards you're dealt, and I was just going to work every day and just establishing a great relationship with Coach Smart and all the new players that we had coming in. Just being able to work your way up and then having Coach Mark give me a scholarship, and it was one of the most amazing blessings of my life. And then having so many amazing people behind me, my parents, my amazing girlfriend, just supporting me every single step of the way and always showing me how to bounce back and persevere. It's been an amazing journey.
When we did our series of Dog Nation appreciation videos back, you know, in the earlier spring, I thought it was really telling that DeAndre Swift had mentioned Blankenship being awarded a scholarship in South, or at least everybody kind of finding out about it, in South Bend the night that Georgia had beaten Notre Dame. DeAndre Swift counted that as one of the best and biggest memories that he had of his time there at UGA. So obviously, the Blankenship story, becoming a great kicker for Georgia, was a fun thing for a lot of people. And now Blankenship is gone, and now Georgia fans are left to wonder, how does Georgia replace him for the upcoming year? Well, this is one of those things where I think there's some good news and I think there's some bad news in terms of what Georgia does to replace Blankenship. First of all, the numbers speak for how difficult this is going to be. Blankenship was third in the SEC a year ago with a field goal percentage make of 81.8%. He was also third in the SEC in scoring last year behind just Najee Harris and the kicker for LSU that obviously was kicking two gazillion extra points. So Blankenship was third in the SEC in scoring a year ago. So obviously the numbers themselves speak to a very, very difficult challenge. However, in terms of finding a kicker not necessarily as good as Blankenship, you may actually not need that. You just need a kicker to be good enough. And if you want to go back and look at Alabama back in 2017, I'll probably butcher the pronunciation of the name, but Alex Papanastos, however you said his name, it was the kicker for Alabama when they won the championship in 2017. And as many people remember, not a great kicker, only made 72% of his field goals that particular season. But that was still good enough for Alabama to win a national championship. Let's stipulate this for a moment. It may be very difficult. It may very well even be impossible for Georgia to produce a kicker as good as Blankenship for the upcoming season or in the next couple of seasons. He was the Groves Award winner. But you don't need a great kicker to be a great team. You just need a kicker to be good enough. And the number for good enough may be Papanastos, who is at 72% near the bottom third of the SEC in field goals made for that particular year, but nonetheless around 72%. Here's what's interesting. If we say, okay, so that's sort of low 70s is the standard you've got to be in, there have only been six field goal kickers, the regular kicker for their team, only six field goal kickers in the last 3 years in the SEC to have a field goal make percentage lower than 70%. Now think about that for a moment. Georgia's in the need to replace Rodrigo Blankenship, a guy that was virtually automatic for most of his Georgia career, but you don't have to necessarily be automatic. You just have to be good enough. And what Alabama produced in 2017 to the tune of winning a national championship, there have only been a small handful of kickers who have been worse than that. However, the bad news about all of this is, if you just want to be honest here for a moment, and Kirby Smart even joked about this with Rodrigo as he, you know, went on to win the Groves Award, that Georgia gave Rodrigo a chance to kick a lot of field goals last year because they weren't scoring very many touchdowns. Think about three games in particular, kind of close Georgia wins in big games. Against Notre Dame, Rodrigo was 3 for 3. Against Florida, Rodrigo was 3 for 3. Against Texas A&M, a game that kind of gets forgotten a little bit, Rodrigo was 4 for 4 in a game that Georgia only won 19-13. That if Rodrigo had been a little bit more like a league average kicker a year ago, there's a very good chance that one of those Georgia wins could have turned into a loss. So what's the ultimate takeaway here? Georgia does have a big challenge awaiting it as it tries to replace Rodrigo Blankenship. But raising the overall level of the offensive play may be more important than who your new kicker is. As Kirby Smart kind of alluded to with his jokes a year ago, a better version of Georgia might not need a kicker as good as Rodrigo. It might just need to be a version of Georgia that uses a kicker less. And so that's ultimately the pressure awaiting the Georgia offense for this upcoming season. It's good to have you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Connor Riley's been on vacation, but now he's back. Let's talk to him about some Georgia football.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
I want to bring in Connor Riley here and welcome back to the program. I know for the video folks, sometimes we've had a little bit of an issue with the audio on that front. We have done some great work, some yeoman's work behind the scenes. That should all be cleared away. So we'll be checking in on that as we bring you the interview here today. And of course, we appreciate your feedback on anything you have going on, whether it be Dog Nation Daily presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Connor, welcome back from the beach. We appreciate you being here and we hope everything has been going well with you. And I trust that it has been.
As always, it's a pleasure to be back on your show, B.A.
Let me begin with this. There's a lot I want to talk to you about because we haven't heard from you much, but let me just begin with you off the topic that I began with today. I think the average Georgia fan kind of wonders where the elite signees are going to come from when it comes to the 21 class. And yes, we've joked about this kind of stuff before of the idea of, you know, what's wrong with Georgia recruiting and everything ends up being fine. Kirby Smart's obviously fully established for himself a great reputation as a recruiter, but admittedly, there are a lot of guys that seem to be leaning elsewhere right now, or at least have the possibility of leaning elsewhere in a way that we would not have considered to be much of a concern a few weeks ago. As more of a level-headed, somewhat more objective viewer, what do you make of all of this?
I think Georgia, perhaps more than any program in the country, I think really needs to have visits sort of open up and be allowed once again. And obviously, a lot of that is going to depend on how this country handles the coronavirus and what the NCAA decides to do. But you know, in talking with Jeff about this, you look back to last year, Keely Ringo, Darnell Washington, Kendall Milton, I think those recruitments were all sort of won long before they ever entered Sanford Stadium for a game during in the run-up to their 2020 decision. I think the visits that those guys took over the summer, I think really secured how they felt about the Georgia program, and they just don't have that opportunity to impress recruits this summer. So, you know, with a lot of these national guys that they're after, a guy like Mason Smith from Louisiana who can't easily get to Athens or you know, wouldn't normally make that kind of a trip. Guys like Tony Grimes, guys who would have to take a flight to get to Georgia. The reality is they can't do that right now. And until we, I think, get some clarity on where that might be and when that might, those visits, however restrictive they are, might open up again, it's hard to really guess when and where Georgia is going to pull these elite five-star recruits from.
So because Georgia recruits so much nationally, has the last couple of years, that's why you think they're more hurt by the lockdown than other programs have been?
I do. Well, and I think the other thing that's worth keeping in mind, too, is the way sort of Georgia goes about building its class. You know, you look at programs like Clemson and Ohio State, those guys like to get their work done before the sort of before the football season starts. You know, they'll have 20-plus commitments before the season starts, and they really only have one or two guys to focus on. Georgia just typically under Kirby Smart has not sort of functioned that way. They have no problem waiting for guys to make their decisions and make their announcements. The past has made for really exciting signing days. You know, last year, after the LSU game, Georgia picked up 10 guys who ultimately ended up signing with the class, whereas Ohio State and Clemson together, I believe, had like 4 over that same time span. So Georgia, you know, traditionally they, in the last two seasons, they've relied more on out-of-state signees. They've signed just 16 players from the state of Georgia combined in the last two classes compared to, I believe, 33 out-of-state prospects. And they're a team that usually, you know, gets their work done a little bit later. And sort of those two factors working together is why I think Georgia sort of is where it is in the recruiting landscape right now.
Let me do one more thing on this topic, then we'll move on to something different. James Crump, watching us live on Facebook a moment ago, says you can't worry about recruiting at the moment. It's just too early. And for the most part, I think that's true. I mean, I think that Georgia's reputation now is firmly established enough that somehow, some way, Georgia's going to put together an elite class this upcoming year. However, one of the things that frustrates me sometimes is there's a way of spinning recruiting news to make it sort of seem like nothing's ever bad news, that whoever you sign, these are the players that you wanted all along. And that to me has never seemed honest enough. I do like to be honest about recruiting, and honesty would compel me to admit that linebacker is a need for Georgia for this class. Georgia only signed the one a year ago, Mekhi Sherman, a very good one, but just the one. So Georgia needs more linebackers for this upcoming class. Knowing that it's a need, knowing these are in-state guys, if you were to whiff on a Barrett Carter, which Georgia has, if you were to whiff on a Smile Mondon, it's way too early to know where any of that's going, but position of need, multiple guys at the elite level in your state, if you were to miss on those linebackers, you'd have to call it a loss no matter what the Georgia class ends up being ranked when this is all said and done.
Yeah, I don't think you can have Kirby Smart come out and say it on National Signing Day back in February, you know, this 2021 class, we need to sign linebackers and great linebacker prospects, given, you know, what they're standing to lose and who they also didn't sign in previous classes. And for arguably two of the top five linebacker prospects in the country to both be in your backyard in the sort of greater Atlanta area, and see both of those guys go elsewhere and potentially go to teams that you're going to have to play and see. You know, Barrett Carter's first game in a Clemson uniform is going to be against Georgia. If Ishmael Mundon goes to Auburn, Georgia's going to see him every single year. To see those guys go to those sort of programs, that's, in my opinion, a significant loss, just given how much emphasis they've had to put on the linebacker corps in this class. And then to see them go to their biggest rivals, I think that's a bad look for Georgia on the recruiting front.
I want to talk about something you wrote before you went on vacation. That's a look at ESPN's take on Georgia's most important game for this upcoming season being Florida instead of Alabama. And the point that you made, or at least that I made on this last week when I referenced your story about this, is I almost think you have to earn Alabama being your most important game. You know, it's a very common refrain in sports, those people that hold up the sign that say, we want Bama. Mm-hmm. For the most part, the people who chant we want Bama are doing it as a joke. They don't actually want Bama. In Georgia's case, it does want Bama. But I think that Georgia, if you want to say they've got one more year of truly vanquishing Florida before it can look at Alabama as its most important game, of course don't always play them in the regular season, Alabama as the most important measuring stick for Georgia, I'm okay with saying, hey, handle Florida one more time, and then you can truly graduate to start worrying more about Alabama. I'm actually okay with saying that.
So I realize I've already lost this debate because I am talking to the chief Gator hater here.
Right.
Florida is obviously on a sort of a more micro level, like obviously the most important game of the season, because you win that game. The last 5 years, the winner of that game has won the SEC East, and I think that's how it's probably going to continue for the foreseeable future. And to win the SEC, you have to win the SEC East first. So I certainly understand, you know, the people that want to make the arguments for Florida and the micro sort of level of importance of that game every year on the Georgia schedule, and along with the rivalry as a whole. But in taking the 30,000-foot view, as Jeff Sintel would like to say, and sort of examining it from a macro perspective, from the sort of national college football fan perspective, I do think that Alabama game is more important, because I think that allows Georgia to sort of make statements that a lot of, you know, opposing fan bases take snipes at for Georgia. You know, they can't get it done against Bama.
Yeah.
Kirby can't beat Saban. I think if they beat them, I think a lot of sort of the quote quarterback questions, unless it's like the 2012 Florida-Georgia game where it's just turnover fest and real ugly, I think if Georgia beats Alabama in that game, I think a lot of the quarterback questions sort of disappear a little bit. So from a larger, you know, taking a step back perspective, I think Alabama has a chance to rewrite a lot of the narratives that are being written about Georgia, right?
So at some point in time this week, I want to talk more about this, because the counter argument to the point that I made a moment ago, the reason why you could potentially say the Alabama game is the most important for Georgia, get this for a moment. If Georgia wins on the road in Tuscaloosa and then loses the SEC championship game, let's say it's to Alabama, you know, in a rematch, or really LSU or anybody else, at that point in time, then Georgia's argument for making the playoff as a non-SEC team, or I should say non-SEC champion, is stronger than it ever otherwise could have been. Because conversely, let's say that Georgia lost in Tuscaloosa but won the SEC championship, they would seemingly have an easier path to the playoff because they're the conference champion, yet the game they would have won would have been the easier one to win, the one played on a neutral field, right, as opposed to the opposing stadium. Alabama's lost twice in Tuscaloosa since 2015. This is not an easy place to get wins on the road. The one argument you could make for Alabama being the most important regular season game for Georgia is that they may punch their ticket for the playoff simply on the basis of winning that game.
So, and to your larger point, I think if teams have shown, if you're able to get through the SEC regular season, before even that SEC championship game, unbeaten, you've already locked up a playoff spot. If LSU had somehow lost to Georgia last year, LSU was still going to be in the college football playoff. I think that Alabama team that Georgia lost to in 2018, had Georgia won that game, I think you see two SEC teams in the playoff once again, Georgia and Alabama. So I do think, you know, winning that first game, it makes, you know, that potential rematch in the SEC, and obviously Georgia wants to win the SEC every year. But if they win that first game and they do beat Florida, they're 12-0. In my mind, regardless of what goes on in the rest of the college football landscape, because just given we know that there aren't going to be that many undefeated teams at the end of the season, I think Georgia would probably already have their college football playoff spot locked up. Now, winning those two games, I think, is a very tough ask. And I personally right now, I don't think that will happen. I think they'll have to win that SEC championship game to get into the college football playoff. But again, back to the sort of macro, larger level, you know, that Alabama game, I think, is just going to say a lot more about the Georgia program than maybe that Florida game will.
Yeah, because here's what I think, and you can decide for yourself if this is fair or not. But I think that Georgia doesn't get the benefit of the doubt that Alabama gets. You say they would have had Alabama lost in 2018, they still made the playoff. We know they made the playoff in 2017 as a non-SEC champion. Because Georgia hasn't won the, you know, national championships that Alabama has won, there's more skepticism in that sort of number five overall spot, putting them in the playoff as one of the four best teams, as opposed to the you know, four most deserving or whatever the argument end up making is. For LSU a year ago, you say, had they lost the SEC championship, would have still made the playoff. First of all, they won at Alabama, so maybe that's a argument in favor of that game being a true validation. They were also scoring 1 million points a game. I think the public is comfortable with the idea of a high-powered offense, you know, like that, you know, being in the college football playoff. The point is, because Georgia hasn't yet achieved some of these things, it needs every point of validation it can get. Toughest place to win in college football, arguably, is Bryant-Denny Stadium. So that's, I think, my case for, even though I understand making the argument for Florida, my case for Alabama is that Georgia needs some of that validation that multiple national championships kind of provide a program like Alabama.
And Georgia and Florida, they're going to be fighting wars against each other every single year. You know, say what you want about Dan Mullen. It's clear, and you probably agree, he's a very good football coach. Mm-hmm. I think the question with him is, how great of a coach is he? With Alabama and Georgia not set to sort of play them every year, and it's not guaranteed when the next time we're going to see Alabama, I think that the opportunity to win that game in Tuscaloosa on September 19th, assuming it still happens, and I think that it still will. I think assuming that game happens, Georgia winning that, I think, goes a long way in saying what Kirby Smart is building and what it can, and what, more than the Florida game, that game can speak volumes about the direction of where this Georgia program is headed.
That's an interesting take that we could probably spend a lot of time talking about. But let me move on that for now. There's a weird thing, and I did this on our pre-recorded show from Monday. There's a weird little pocket. This is a small corner of the internet. It's not a big deal yet. But a pocket of online chatter that says, well, you know, Emory Jones is actually better than Kyle Trask anyway. Like, there's this, it's not the mainstream, but it's not, you know, non-existent either. This group of people that want to say, well, you know, Kyle Trask is whatever, but, you know, you don't have a lot of returning receiver productivity, still have a very limited running game. You need the most athletic quarterback you can find. Emory Jones actually been better than some people realize when he has played. What do you think the chances are that, taking injury out of it, that Florida plays a different quarterback than Kyle Trask, I'm meaning Emory Jones here, when these two teams play on Halloween night?
Pretty slim. I think what we saw with Mullen even last year, you know, there were a lot more questions, I think, being asked about Felipe Franks than there are about Kyle Trask right now. And my belief, had Franks not broken his ankle as he did against Kentucky, like, we don't see Felipe Franks, or we don't see Kyle Trask last year. I think Franks would have been the guy for Mullen. And I think you're going to see something similar again this year with Trask. You know, Trask, I think in a lot of ways is sort of a mirror image of his coach, in that I do think he's a good quarterback. I think he's a guy you can win a lot of games with. But I don't know if he's a great quarterback, and I don't know how sort of great he is and how much he elevates these sort of flaws on that Florida team, specifically their lack of a running game and the questions they have at the wide receiver position. But I also don't think that necessarily inserting Emory Jones over him is sort of a lock thing that we're absolutely going to see. Florida's schedule is much, much weaker than Georgia's, and I think that's going to allow them to rack up a lot of wins. And if they're not really struggling, I don't think there's going to be a need to insert sort of more controversy or more tougher decisions by saying, hey, how much more do we have to play this Emory Jones guy who might have more upside than Kyle Trask, but is also going to have some growing pains as he sort of gets adjusted more to team's game planning.
I'll make this quick. Here's why I think this is relevant for UGA fans. I think it's very interesting that some people, even though Kyle Trask is commonly cited as a reason for why Florida could win the SEC East, there are still some people who are seemingly not satisfied with Trask and are kind of wondering, well, maybe Emory Jones is the better guy anyway. I think if you really want to be as objective as possible, or, you know, maybe objectivity is the wrong word when it comes to me on this particular topic, I'll grant you that. But some of what's said about Trask during this offseason is not wildly different than what was said about Felipe Franks a year ago. Franks had had seemingly a pretty good conclusion to the 2018 season and therefore was ready for big things in 2019, and it did not happen. Prior to injury, Franks was not having a good year. Florida was a near loser a couple of times with him as the starter, and ultimately that gets forgotten because Kyle Trask kind of comes in, does some of the same things, and now he's kind of given some of those savior vibes going into the 2020 season. The idea that seemingly not everyone is still sold on Trask, even though that's a pretty common refrain from the media, it's all the more reason to wonder. The reputation that Dan Mullen has as a quarterback whisperer, the kind of guy that builds offense no matter where he goes, the fact that there's a lot more sizzle than steak with some of that, I do think that's a relevant conversation for UGA fans.
Yeah, and I think that the thing with Mullen is, so yes, I think he's very good at building a competent offense, an offense that can move you the ball, that is going to, you know, put up enough points to put you in a position to win. But it's not like he's Joe Brady out here. It's not like he's even, I know you're not a fan of him right now, Lincoln Riley out there. You know, he is not sort of building those offenses.
Oh, we're going to get to Riley before the show's done.
He is not sort of building these offenses that are regarded, I think, as the truly elites of the college football. But because he has so often done less, or he's done more with less, I think he sort of gets sort of elevated in how he's seen by the national media. But the reality is he's not getting on the recruiting trail the type of players that allow you to sort of go from having good offenses every year to having truly dynamic difference-making offense.
I've made this point. We'll get ready to wrap up because now we're just sort of getting into my, trollish ways. But I've made the point a couple of times in recent shows. If you look at the last few years, Mullen's 2 years of Florida, final year at Mississippi State, that's just a for instance here. Defense has been better than the offense on every single one of those teams.
Yep.
That Todd Grantham's actually coached up a better defense. They've had more talent on the defensive side of the ball as well at Florida and Mississippi State. And this idea that somehow Mullen's a great offensive guy, there's not a ton of stats to actually back that up in comparison to his defense, which is at the same programs in both spots.
Right, but the last two seasons, I believe they finished outside the top 20 in national scoring offense. Mm-hmm. So, you know, yes, Mullen does sort of get this, you know, reputation that is somewhat deserved, but I don't think it's totally, you know, totally warranted at the same time either. So I think it'll be interesting this year. You know, I think this year, perhaps maybe more than Kirby Smart, we're going to see a lot of the narrative around Dan Mullen change either one way. And you've made this point before,
right?
One way or another. It's either he's going to, you know, somehow beat Georgia, go to the SEC title game, you know, how they do against Alabama or LSU, I'm not sure. But he'll sort of validate what a lot of people have said about him, or he'll lose to Kirby Smart again. And when that happens, I think a lot of the shine is going to be off Mullen in this Florida program.
Yeah, and we'll finish with this. I have readily admitted that if Mullen were to beat Kirby this year, far inferior, you know, average talent, everything else, someone like me will have to come on the air and admit that, yes, you can, you know, coach up lesser players and win a game against a program like Georgia. You'll be forced to admit that. I don't think it's going to happen, but I'm not going to hide from that. If it does happen, I'll have to admit I'm wrong. However, I want the same stakes to exist for the other side there as well, because after a couple of years worth of Mullen's finally got the quarterback that can help him get over the hump against Georgia, if it doesn't happen this year when Georgia's had to go to the ranks of the transfer world to bring in its quarterback, have to bring in an offensive coordinator from kind of outside Kirby Smart's typical philosophy, if it doesn't happen this year, I don't know how you ever resurrect that Dan Mullen storyline moving into 2021. I just don't know how you do it.
So I'll ask you one final question to sort of tie everything we've talked about together. Which game means more to which coach? Kirby Smart against Alabama or Dan Mullen against
Georgia? I think it's a really good question, and you could obviously argue for either side, but let me tell you why I think it's Kirby. Because when you have a chance to end someone, that's incredibly valuable. We saw Kirby end Butch Jones. We saw Kirby end Paul Johnson. We've seen Kirby, I'm probably even forgetting some of the guys, end Jim McElwain, of course. When you have a chance to end someone, to truly finish them off, that makes the game more important because, Kirby's trying to preserve sort of a perfect record against Dan Mullen, where Dan Mullen's just trying to enter the chat when it comes to Kirby Smart. So from that standpoint, even though, you know, Mullen's trying to climb his way up the ladder, Kirby Smart's opportunity to vanquish Mullen for what I think could potentially be a final time to truly sort of end that narrative all the way around. I think it makes the game still more important for Kirby, even though Kirby's the one that operates from the standpoint of the winning streak.
Yeah, and I probably agree with you there. I think Mullen wins that game against Georgia, I think that validates, like you say, just about everything he does. The questions about it is, how does Florida recruit, especially at the top end level? I think a lot of those questions disappear if Florida does beat Georgia this season.
All right, good stuff, Connor. It's good to have you back in the saddle this week, both on Dog Nation Daily and at DogNation.com. We'll look forward to talking to you soon.
As always, a pleasure.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, so I think that's really good. I think it's, look, it's fun to be having these conversations. We obviously know some of the other conversations that we're, you know, sometimes have to have, and we'll get to some of the coronavirus stuff here in a minute, but it sure is fun to be talking about some of that other kind of stuff again, and we certainly appreciate Connor Riley being here on Dog Nation Daily. And obviously, I love the stakes being high for these games. I love the idea of, I mean, every single day I put myself out there in this Georgia-Florida stuff, and you know, I love the idea that, you know, if I'm wrong on that particular Monday, I got to come back and hear there'll be Florida fans really ready to give me grief. There will be fans of other SEC teams other than Florida and Georgia that are ready to give me grief just because I run my mouth and, you know, talk a lot of trash or whatever else. So I think all that's really fun. And I think that, you know, some of the arguments, we'll probably do more of this on the show later on this week, but some of the arguments, you know, for the Alabama game and what Georgia has a chance to accomplish there, you know, validating itself, whether it wins the SEC or not, I think that's probably pretty interesting too. So we'll probably spend a lot more time on that coming up. Probably the biggest news that happened while the 4th of July break was going on was with the NCAA. And this is one of those things, and Texas A&M, this is one of those things that probably sounds worse than it is. Some recruiting violations going back a couple years ago. Jimbo Fisher now has a show cause attached to his name. All that really means is that, you know, these sanctions follow him if he were to take another job, which he's not going to do. I guess Graham, the current Tennessee running backs coach, kind of gets caught up in some of this there as well. Jimbo is going to be limited in terms of, you know, his recruiting ability, you know, for the upcoming fall. For the most part, this is much ado about nothing. It happened. You get slapped on the wrist and you kind of move on. And I think the Texas A&M probably is moving on here. And that's probably the most important, I think, takeaway for all of this. This is happening very quietly because it's so far away from here. But A&M has been a much bigger player in recruiting than a lot of people probably realize, and I think are set up to have a very good season this upcoming year. We always joke about this, but it's true. I talk about Jimbo Fisher in terms of him being a good coach. I think at the end of his time at Florida State, I blame the failings of that institution a lot more than I blame Jimbo Fisher. Let's face it. After that divorce, you know, I think that Jimbo Fisher comes out looking a little bit better for the most part than what Florida State has looked like in a post-Jimbo Fisher world. So I think the real takeaway here in terms of, if you saw this headline, you're not quite sure what to make of it. I think the real takeaway is that Florida State, Texas A&M, is not slowed down at all by this stuff. You know, a lot of Georgia fans wonder, does it make it easier to get an LJ Johnson or somebody like that? I really don't think this is going to have much of an impact on Texas A&M's 2021 recruiting class, nor do I think it slows down what has been a pretty impressive, you know, run as of late for A&M in acquiring talent. We talked about this on our pre-recorded Monday show. According to BetOnline, A&M is 4-1 right now to win the SEC West. Ultimately, that's not my pick to win the SEC West. I'm taking Alabama. But in terms of what's currently going on at LSU, what's currently going on at Auburn, the two other schools that are seemingly the biggest threats to Alabama on a year-in, year-out basis, I'll take the current state, at least for right now, the 2020 snapshot of Texas A&M, I'll take that over what's happening at Auburn, what's happening at LSU. And frankly, if it comes to pass this year that A&M finally puts some more successful football together, then it could truly have some staying power. It's probably the farthest away of, you know, any of the main major SEC programs for Georgia. We have a tendency not to think much about the Aggies. Georgia and Texas A&M haven't played very much. Did play a year ago, but haven't played very much. Easy to be out of sight, out of mind. But I expect the Aggies to be a major part of the 2020 SEC story. And I don't think the recent NCAA infractions announced do much to change that whatsoever. There was some big recruiting news over the weekend. This is kind of closure to a story that we've talked about before. Caleb Williams, as expected, committed to Oklahoma. Now, I want to admit something for a second. There's a lot about Lincoln Riley's personality I don't really like. I thought it was kind of funny over the weekend. This was an inside joke with Oklahoma fans. He tweeted out the idea of it's just another weekend, basically meaning that, hey, you know, no big deal. You know, Oklahoma fans were obviously on pins and needles about getting Caleb Williams, and he joked about that with them. However, a lot of, you know, Patriots on 4th of July weekend, when they saw Lincoln Riley saying it's just another weekend, they took that to be an anti-patriotic message. So for a brief moment, Lincoln Riley kind of got dragged on social media, which I'm going to lie to you, I didn't really hate, because I don't always love everything that Lincoln Riley does. He's sort of the Karen of the college football world in my mind sometimes. But nonetheless, they did get Caleb Williams. Williams has kind of become a controversial figure in the last few days of really nothing of his own doing. As we talked about, a lot of people weren't that happy with the way that the Elite 11 camp played out, where it was supposed to be, you know, the MVP of the camp was supposed to be on the basis of 50% of your junior film and 50% of the performance at the camp. Obviously, the coronavirus has, like, you know, changed everything, has changed the Elite 11 camp. And then, according to some firsthand accounts of people on the scenes, maybe Caleb Williams wasn't doing so well. So Trent Dilfer, who's kind of the face of the Elite 11, changed the criteria. All of a sudden, now it's not 50-50. Now it's the evaluation will be made on 75% of your junior film. And that gave the nod to Caleb Williams to win the camp MVP. I think that Williams is probably a pretty good guy and a good player. I don't think it's his fault that the Elite 11 became a sham this year. But nonetheless, it's been kind of weird to see Williams become kind of a controversial figure on the recruiting trail here over the course of the last couple of days. But he is at Oklahoma. Oklahoma has obviously developed quite a reputation for bringing in quarterbacks and doing good things with quarterbacks. And we'll see if Caleb Williams is the next in a line there. We'll make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia, this is one of those things where I get sort of tired of talking about the coronavirus stuff because I can't stand it. But it's one of those things that's just kind of out there, and we have to sort of have to address where it's going, especially given the fact that there was just sort of a lot of angst. You know, I try not to spend a ton of time on social media on these like holiday weekends, and for the most part, that's what July 4th was for us here at Dog Nation, kind of a holiday weekend. But when you pop back on there on social media, you see some real concerns, some of it genuine, some of it melodramatic, but you see some real concerns about, you know, what's going to happen for college football this upcoming season. I do think it's telling a couple of things here. For the most part, you don't see any of these concerns currently taking place with the NFL. The NFL seems to be all systems go. They've recently announced the training camp is supposed to happen as expected. I guess the preseason could be wildly different. But for the most part, you don't hear very many people willing to concede the possibility the NFL may not take place this fall. And obviously, some people will come back and say, well, yeah, but NFL players get played, college players don't. And that's certainly fine. I think the misunderstanding there is the number of college players that are somehow playing college football against their own will. You know, the idea that they are being forced to play college football, I think that that's probably maybe a misunderstood part of this. I did think it was interesting, this is the one piece of news we'll get to on this, that the university system of Georgia is still planning on, you know, having classes this upcoming year, but I guess also now going to a mask mandate after it was initially just, I guess, strongly suggested that masks be worn. The University System of Georgia, this is not just UGA, this is Georgia Tech too, and some of those other, you know, sort of big state schools now facing, you know, now mandating that students wear masks this upcoming year. It sounds like the professors and the instructors were wanting this. And, you know, I know is to say this. I'm going to take it as good news for college football that the university, I'm talking about the universities themselves, the schools themselves, are still talking about the ways in which the classes can take place. And yes, I know it came out the other day that Harvard's going to be online this upcoming year. I will echo the sentiments of a lot of people. Harvard has a very different standard for what it can get away with than the average school can. Harvard's essentially selling a diploma that's a ticket to, you know, the elite circles of power in the country. For the most part, you know, colleges are selling a, you know, normal college experience to middle-class people who it's a little bit of a financial stretch to pay for. You know, the less normal that college experience becomes, the more people are going to kind of think about, is there something better that I can do with my educational experience as opposed to taking these classes, you know, via Zoom? So the fact that the colleges themselves are still talking about taking place, even if it's with a mask mandate, which I guess probably seems like a pretty good idea as far as I know with all of that, I want to take that to still be some good news in the midst of what seems like a lot of angst and a lot of concern about college football taking place. I've said before, I'm not going to be anything but honest with about any of this. I have no idea what the right thing to do from a science perspective is. I am very biased in terms of how much I think our society needs college football. That's obviously not at the expense of doing something for the benefit of public health or whatever else. I mean, I obviously, you know, that should be able to go without saying. I'm looking for reasons why this season can occur and can take place. And the fact that, you know, the powers that be that run the college part of all of this, the fact they're still talking about students on campus, the fact they're still talking about, you know, ways in which that can happen, to me kind of opens the door for college football to also take place as well. And, you know, as we said with the Reese Davis comments as a part of Monday's show, there's some much needed optimism right now that occasionally pops through. When it's there, we'll find a way to bring it to you here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. But obviously, with all of that, there's still a need to do your part and do the right thing and stay healthy. And obviously, continued thoughts and prayers out there to everyone trying to get that done. It's a lot more fun for us to talk about the regular college football part of this. And, you know, you do that with thinking about some of the big games that take place this fall and some of the recruiting storylines that kind of fall into place. That's the area in which we're a lot more comfortable around here. And boy, it'll be nice when we can focus fully on all of that for the upcoming season. But as long as there's that, you know, cloud hanging over us, it'd be kind of foolish to completely, totally ignore all of this. So that's kind of where things stand here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia today. A great thing to do, though, as we wrap up today's program, our buddy Eddie, the unofficial mascot of Dog Nation Daily, would want us to do the Gator Hater Updater. Remind you that it's now been 1,347 days since those lousy, stinking Gators have beaten Georgia. That's a number that's going to be going up, we think, for some time to come. Appreciate you being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by ESOG. We'll see you again tomorrow.